Confessions of a Trainwreck.
Commandment number 124. Thou shalt remember that money talks, but all mine ever says is goodbye. Hola, train wrecks. Happy Tuesday and welcome back to another episode of Confessions of a Train Wreck. I'm Phoebe, your podcast host and absolute hot mess of a human who has the pleasure of being back in your ears for yet another week. This week, I am so excited to welcome back the ever delightful Victoria Devine from the She's on the Money podcast for part two of our Millennial Money Mistakes podcast chat. Now, as you would have realized if you listened to part one last week, Victoria is, without a doubt, one of the loveliest queens I have ever had the pleasure of interviewing. And to be completely honest with you, it kind of felt more like a chat with a girlfriend rather than an interview with someone that I'd never actually met before, which really shouldn't come as any kind of surprise to me because her name is Victoria Devine and she is divine. So if you missed last week's episode, honestly, do yourself a favor and go back and catch up because we covered some really relatable topics like keeping up with Instagram culture, Afterpay, and retail therapy. So if any of those things strike a chord with you like they do with me, I popped the link in this week's show notes along with all of Victoria's information, including links to her Instagram, podcast, and website, which I highly recommend you go and check out now. So let's pick up where we left off last week. Where were we again? Okay, number three is not knowing the difference between needs and wants. So I have an example of, in my opinion, something that is a need and a want, and you might be able to help me clarify the difference. I'll let you swallow that water before I say this because you'll probably spit it out when I tell you what my need is.
All right. What is your need? I don't know if I can deal with this. What is your need?
My need is a gold Cartier love bangle.
Oh, my gosh.
They are $9,500, but I've wanted one for so many years, so much so that when I went to China 2 years ago, I bought a fake one just to see whether or not I liked it.
And you
just
did?
Just to kind of test the waters before I loved it.
I didn't even know you could get fake ones, so please tell me more about this. Like,
yeah,
let's skip this.
Mine was $20 in China.
Please.
Yeah, so I did buy a fake one in China for $20. It was very terrible quality and it rusted almost probably 3 weeks after I wore it because, you know, you don't take them off, you wear them in the shower. But I go to a very affluent suburb gym. I'm not affluent myself, but it's a very bougie suburb in Brisbane and a lot of the mums who go there have the Cartier bangles. And I walked in and one said, oh my gosh. Exactly.
Like, who knows?
Well, case in point, well, when I walked in, she said, I love your Cartier bangle. Look how new yours is. Mine's all dull and matte now. And I didn't correct her. I didn't tell her it was fake because I was so embarrassed.
Oh, my gosh. I couldn't have. Don't worry. I couldn't have either. Like, if I had a fake version of something and I walked in with it and someone just assumed it was real, I would have been like, yeah, totally. Like, absolutely. But I don't know. Did you say...
Would you clarify that as a need or a want?
100... Oh, like, I don't know. Like, you said that it was $9,500, but you got a $20 version. Like, how many $20 versions should you go through before it's actually more equitable to purchase the real one? I don't know.
Well, exactly.
I just feel like that's a want rather than a need.
Okay.
But I think that that's where people get confused, and it is really easy to confuse it because it's, you know, maybe not Cartier love bracelet. That's maybe not the best example of where most people go wrong. You've just gone real hard on it. I think that most people confuse their wants with their needs when they're talking about lifestyle. So they'll be like, oh no, Victoria, but okay. I need to live in a 2-bedroom apartment near the beach. Like, I need that. And you'll be like, well, you don't actually.
Right.
Or they'll say, no, but I need my $65 a week gym membership. And you'll be like, okay, but you actually don't. And I'm not saying compromise your values. I'm not saying compromise your beliefs and the things that you really want to purchase. But I think we need to be honest with ourselves about what we actually need and versus what we actually want. Because at the end of the day, our wants are, you know, all the things that are above and beyond food, shelter, you know, safety, all of that. Like, we need to be safe. We need to have a home. Do we need to have the 2-bedroom apartment that you live in as a single female? No, probably not. Like, you could absolutely live in a share house. Do you want to, though? Is it aligned to your values, though? Yes. So maybe you spend your money on that. But I think that people often come to me and they say, Victoria, life's so expensive. I just need to spend all of this. And you go, you really don't. I get that that's of value to you, but you're not creating wealth for future you. Like, what can we compromise on now so that future you doesn't have to compromise on anything? And I think that that's where the balance comes in. So like, yes, a Cartier bracelet can feel like you really, really need it, but it doesn't mean that you actually do need it. But it might be an emotional thing, right? Like, I'm not ever going to argue with you. If that's the thing that's going to make you the happiest person in this entire world, am I going to argue with you over it? No, but I am going to say, have a think about it. It's obviously a lot of money. Have a think about whether it aligns to your values. You know, what are you sacrificing to get this? Like, what does that, you know, let's call it $10,000 look like at retirement if you invested it, knowing that money doubles every 10 years? So, is that investment going to make you really happy? And you might go, yes, Victoria, like I will be the most happy person in the entire world. And I go, okay, no problems. Like, cool. I'm fine with that. But if you make the choice to do that, I want you to know that there were alternatives, and I want you to make the active choice that you're not taking up those alternatives, as opposed to just being like, oh, damn, I wish I'd known better. Like, I want you to know better now so that when you make that choice, you're like, no, it was something I really wanted.
Yeah. Look, I will admit that I was very close to taking out the $10,000 from my super when they were letting people do that during COVID to get this bracelet, but I didn't because I realized I'm not going to die without this bracelet. I might feel like it, and emotionally I might feel like I'm not complete without it, but
I feel like a money diary.
I've been doing just fine for 30
years.
Honestly,
I feel like a money diary from you on my podcast is almost a necessity. Like, I would love
I will do it. I'm here for that.
I would love that. I'd be like, you know, what were her values? Like, a Cartier bracelet from Super. Like, justify that to the government when they come back around and go, hey, did you use it for your for living costs? So you'd be like, yes, I feel so alive.
Yes, I feel really safe right now.
It's locked on. It's not going anywhere.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Well, you really made me think twice about that. Number four is something that I think people tend to have a lot of questions about, and that is not budgeting. And look, there was a very long period of my life that I did not budget for. And that's when, you know, that was probably about 7 years ago when I was in a very bad financial position. And I do have a budget now, but it's a very rough budget. And the main kind of things I've learned to do is I have a few sub accounts. So there's like a bills account where all my direct debits and rent come out of. There's a car account where money goes for like rego and servicing. There's one account for tax where a percentage of all my invoices go. And then there's savings. And I only ever used to put my residual income into my savings account, but I lost all my residual jobs in COVID. So I haven't actually put any money into that savings account for a while, which I think is okay given the situation.
It's 100%.
But now I think I'm going to have to, rebudget now that I don't have my other streams of income now. But is there kind of a set amount of money you should be setting aside each pay to put into savings? Because you know how there's that, I don't know if it's a myth or not, but I hear a lot of people saying, and it's a very old school phrase, 10% of your wage should be put straight into savings.
I mean, that sounds really great. And if you're in a position where that's something that you can do, I think fantastic. That might be something that a lot of people like structure, right? Mm-hmm. So some people just want to be like, what percentage should I be saving? But I have never actually told people to save a certain percentage because I think this differs depending on how much you earn. If you earn $40,000 a year and you are putting 10% of your salary into savings, that is massive. Like in comparison to all of your other costs, that's insane. But if you're earning $400,000 a year, well, I would expect you to be in a position where you could save a lot more than 10%. So I just feel like percentages aren't accurate. But for me, I think going back to budgeting and what that actually means, it's actually not about having a budget that you, quote, have to stick to. It's actually a budget for me is about understanding your money, knowing what is coming in, knowing what is going out, and being in control of that and knowing exactly, okay, well, each and every single year I spend $19,000 on bills and costs and rent and everything combined, so that you can be empowered to know, all right, well, that means I have $15,000 left over for my savings and I can, you know, allocate that efficiently. It's not actually about saying, all right, I only have $50 this week for groceries, because I think that's really unrealistic. So for me, a budget is actually just keeping track of what you are spending and going and being quite honest with yourself and saying, okay, well, what do I actually spend? Let's get it on paper so that I can make the most of my situation. Once it's on paper, maybe you'll say, oh, I'm really not comfortable with the fact that as a single person, I'm spending $200 a week on groceries. You might want to readjust that. But hey, it might be aligned with your values. So I'm, again, not going to argue with you, but I want you to be aware of your spendings, not always go, oh my gosh, I've got $50 budgeted. I always go over. Well, increase the budget for that and be real with yourself so that we don't actually feel bad about budgeting. And then overlaying over the top of that is cash flow. So cash flow is where the money flows to. And for me and for my own personal financial success, I need a clean and clear cash flow, because I'm good at seeing money in my account and going, oh, like, I love shoes. I'll go spend money on shoes. So I give myself a certain amount every single week for food, for fuel, and for fun. And that gets transferred from my personal account every Thursday to my spending account, and that's all I've got. If I spend all my money on brunch and dinners over the weekend, cool. I don't have any surplus so that I can spend it on any kind of extra discretionary anything. I have to wait till next Thursday and I, quote, get paid again, because I've automated my budget. I know how much I have in bills and that stays in that account. I've automated how much I'm saving. And so every single week, instead of being worried about the cash flow and, you know, how much can I save each week? It's like, well, actually I save X amount per week because I've worked out that from all my bills, I then have this amount left over. I'm going to split this between these goals. And then you have a clear amount, because you can go, all right, well, if I'm saving $200 a week and I'm in a situation where that happens every single week for 52 weeks of the year, that's $10,400 that I'm saving. Wow. And you can actually write that down and go, my $200 a week will mean that in 12 months I have 10 grand. And I think that having those numbers and making it really clean and clear means that we meet these goals instead of going, oh, I'm going to save $300 a week. It's like, well, that's not reasonable. You're going to feel really disheartened really quickly because you're always going to dip into your savings. Like what you were saying before about going out for dinner with your partner and your friend. I think that you need to just be really real with yourself about what you are spending so that you can budget for it, so that you don't feel guilty for dipping into savings. In saying that, at a time like now when COVID's happening, I think we all need to be pretty kind to ourselves, because it's okay to not be contributing to savings right now. Like, at the end of the day, we are trying to survive. And I think that, you know, we're both on Instagram. We see lots of quotes. We're both on TikTok. I see lots of people... Literally, I see lots of people posting these quotes that I just really dislike, that like, if you don't come out the other side of COVID with a new skill, a new this, a new that, or a new mindset, you haven't done the right thing. And it's like, no, sorry, we're actually just trying to survive. Like, no human is meant to be at home in isolation, not being social. Like, my job is meant to be face to face. My community around me is meant to be a community that comes together. Like, we are just trying to survive through this period. And I think if we end up putting unrealistic expectations on ourselves, we end up upset. Like, if you're not contributing to savings, cool. Don't get down about it. Don't be hard on yourself. It is what it is. You have some power later down the track. Just look after yourself. And I think that that's really important to point out, because so many people are reaching out to me at the moment. They're like, look, Victoria, I'm so depressed. I'm not able to save. I'm not able to this. I'm not able to that. It's like, we're actually all in this together. That's okay.
Yeah. Wow. That one of the biggest things I just took away from that was looking at a budget and savings in terms of maybe your salary and a year rather than week to week or fortnight to fortnight. Because I think when you look at, for example, if I get paid fortnightly, for example, so I put all of my bill money, all of my car money, all of my fun money into different accounts every fortnight. But to me, I'm like, oh, sometimes if I do want to go out for a bougie dinner or get a new dress, I'll be like, oh, well, I won't put that money into this account this week, but it's just this once, so it won't hurt. And I think, well, you know, how far can $100 really get me? But if you...
That's $5,000 a year.
Backwards and look at it in exactly.
That's $5,000 a year. And if you do that often, it adds up. Like, I promise you, these things add up. And that's why I budget. So I budget on a weekly basis for you to manage it personally. But we sit down together, we organize your budget on an annual basis so that you can feel really empowered and motivated. Like if I said to you, Phoebe, you'll save $10,000 for this goal, another $10,000 for this goal, and it's all really possible if you just spend this and, you know, we'll automate all of your bills and expenses and rent. You'll be like, oh, sweet. Like I didn't even know I could save that amount. And I go, just don't turn off the direct debit. That's it. Like everything's automated. Yeah. It will just happen. And you go, what? It'll just happen. Well, yeah, because we've worked backwards. All you have to worry about is your weekly amount. And you know what? If you have a bad week and you blew out on that week and, you know, you spent everything in your account plus the backup stuff that was sitting in there from last time, cool. Next week, you'll get another amount. Just have a better week. Make a few small decisions instead of going, oh my God, I pulled money from savings. Does that make sense? Like it's all about...
Yeah, it's like you're not dwelling on it. It's kind of like a cheat meal. People think like, oh, if I have a pizza tonight, I'm going to undo all of the hard work I spent at the gym this week. But one bad meal won't kill you. One blowout with money won't derail your whole savings.
Absolutely
don't get
not.
Too caught up in it and I feel then like, self-sabotage even more.
Exactly. And I feel like anything longer than a week when it comes to your personal spending is too long because I can't remember what I was eating 2 weeks ago. Like I don't know what I ordered.
Lord, no.
Like where did I go out for dinner? I don't know. Like, let's be honest, I haven't left the house in weeks. But at the end of the day... Like,
I shouldn't laugh. It's not funny.
You know what? It's kind of funny. Like, I'm good at Uber Eats, though. But yeah, I can't...
Good.
Yeah, all right. There you go. I can't remember what I ordered on Uber Eats 2 weeks ago, but I can remember what I had last weekend on Uber Eats. So I feel like we just need to break it down into manageable bite-sized pieces that make sense to us, that we feel really in control of. And that makes sense to me. And I've got clients that, you know, go, oh, Victoria, like I will blow that if it's all in my account on the one day. Cool. Let's do a daily budget. Like some people need it broken down even further, but it's understanding yourself, understanding what works for you, and then creating a structure that you don't actually have to maintain all that much. Like if we set that up once a year, fantastic. You get a pay rise, fantastic. Instead of having lifestyle creep, which is where we start spending a little bit more just because we earn more, you can go, all right, well, I got a pay rise. I'm now earning $3,000 more per year. I'm going to allocate that straight to savings. Nothing changes except for the fact that you are creating more wealth for yourself.
Yeah. That is genius. And I think what I'm taking from this is I need to have an offline conversation, an appointment with you to...
Let's do... I was going to say, you and I can sit down and we can do an hour of power and I will create your budget and your cash flow for you and you'll walk away being like, oh my gosh, I can do it.
That is exactly what I'm here for. And anybody who wants to get involved with that, I will put all of Victoria's information obviously in the show notes so you can get in touch and be a bomb-ass financial bitch too. The last point, which is one that absolutely terrifies me, so I really don't have much to say on this matter, is not investing early enough. Now, I know absolutely nothing about investing, but I feel like a lot of people are talking about it.
Investing sexy. Help. Let's talk about it.
Okay.
I love investing. Obviously, I'm a financial advisor. But I think that what we don't understand about investing is the outcome of it. And if I could tell you why you're doing something, you are far more likely to commit to it or see value in it. And it goes the same for careers. It goes the same for literally everything. If I say, hey, Phoebe, can you please pick this up and put it down? You'll be like, no, like that makes no sense to me. But if I go, it's because I'll give you $50, you'll be like, yeah, I'll do it. Like, sweet. If I give you the motivation and say, why would you do this? I think that's where we need to start. Why would I invest? Because at some point I want you to have financial freedom. And financial freedom to me is when, it's a couple of things, but the main thing is when you get to a certain age, you have an asset that will pay you money instead of you going to work. So if I said to you, all right, Phoebe, you earn, you know, $60,000 a year, $70,000 a year. If that money was coming in without you going to work, you could still live and survive, right? You'd be like, yeah, sweet. How great would that be? That would be the dream to have money.
Yeah, it's like the opposite Yeah, the opposite of an exchange of time for money.
Exactly. And that's what we're trying to do when we invest. We are trying to create an asset that will then pay us an income that we can live off instead of going to work. And to me, that's what financial freedom means. So why is that important? Because we actually all have the power to do it. And I know a lot of your listeners are 20-something train wrecks. So this is going to be really powerful for them. But if you've listened to my podcast, you've heard this example before because it's one of the only ones I have memorized. So I apologize. But if you are 21 years old and you started investing $500 a month, which feels like a lot, but I guarantee you it is not if you start early and start consistently and then pretend you never earned that money, just always invest it. By the time you are 65 years old, you would have saved and put away a total of $240,000. But because it is invested, your investment portfolio average rate of return by the age of 65 would be worth $1.2 million. That's if you start at 21. Exactly. And $500 a month, when I say you could have $1.2 million, you could be a millionaire. That's not even including your super. That's not including any other savings you do. That doesn't include anything. It's just $500 a month. And if you invest that and put that aside for your financial future, you're going to have this investment portfolio of $1.2 million. Now, that sounds sexy, like you'll be a millionaire. Great. What does that actually mean, though? And back to what I was saying before about income, if we base, so the average Australian or the average return of the Australian share market's about 10, 11%. Let's not base it on that. Let's just cut that in half and say 5%. If the share market and your investment portfolio each year from then on in only returned 5%, pretty conservative, but like, let's underpromise and hopefully overdeliver. That means that you would have a passive income of $60,000 a year that you don't have to go to work for. That's what that means.
A passive income of $60,000.
That's exactly what that means. It just means that every year, an asset worth $1.2 million that you just paid $500 a month for is going to give you $60,000 a year in income that you don't have to go to work for. And your $1.2 million, if you just take your $60,000 a year, it doesn't diminish. It sits there for, and it just keeps going on and keeps going on. And then maybe you can use that in the future, you know, give it to your kids in an inheritance. I don't know. But it's completely up to you. But that's just you. And I think that if I could teach everybody to start young and start early and see the benefit in that, we would all retire comfortably. And I know that, you know, a lot of people are going to be like, oh, Victoria, but I need more than $60,000 a year. Okay, no problems. Same goes for other amounts. You just need to increase how much you are investing every single month. And maybe it's not doable right now, but as your income increases, you're able to increase the amount that you invest per month. And that's going to have a tangible impact on your financial future. So like, that's why I'm so passionate about what I do. Because it's actually not got anything to do with, okay, like let's save and get out of debt. Like that's all given. We need to do that. But the reason investing is so attractive is because I can create a life for you that you didn't think was possible. And all you need to do is start really early. But if we like push this forward and you were 40 and you were like, Victoria, that sounds great. I really need to do this. And this is why I'm really passionate about getting young women to do it. Awesome. Do you have $4,500 a month to save? Like that's how much you would have to invest. But that's how much once, I think it's even more than that if I'm honest. I'm just being quite conservative. But once you're in your 40s, to achieve exactly the same goal, you need to be contributing $4,500 a month and you will retire in exactly the same position as the 21-year-old who was investing only $500 a month. And once you're 40, let's be honest.
Why do they not teach you this stuff in school?
Look, I don't know. And I'm feeling like I want to get into schools and be like, hello, it's me. I'm just wondering. I've got this one example. I hope that you understand. But, you know, we could.
I think you should.
But we could do this for so many different amounts of money. But at the end of the day, I think the tangible impact comes when I can say, look, this is the impact of it over a long period of time. And this is the position it puts you in. Whereas so many people are like, oh, yeah, investing's important. It's like, well, can you tell me why it's important? Can you tell me what I'm going to get out of this? Because, you know, you might start an investment portfolio. You might go pick up, you know, one of these micro investing platforms that are all over social media at the moment. but you are kind of like, oh, well, you know, once my portfolio reaches $500, I'm going to pull it out and I'm going to spend it on X, Y, and Z, because no one's explained to you why we are actually investing and like why people say investing over the long term is really important. You go, cool, but why? Yeah. So that is why, because passive income means you don't have to go to work, and that's the retirement dream, right? Like having an income.
100%. Yes.
So that's 100%. That's investing. Well, that's why you need to start early, and it doesn't have to be complex.
And scary. I'm just a little bit confused as to, and this is a very dumb and probably naive thing to say, but when you invest your money, you hear a lot of people talking about things like the stock market. And I have one friend, for example, and if she's listening, she'll kill me, but I won't use her name. Her parents taught her to, she has a big chunk of gold.
Yep.
Like two big chunks of gold that were like, I think they were $5,000 each, because her parents told her that by spending some of her savings on this stuff, it's an asset that won't depreciate. So instead of just having money in the bank where you never know what's going to happen, like we all saw what happened to our super a couple of months ago, it took a dip and then it went up again. They taught her to buy these chunks of gold. At the time, I was like, what are you doing? And that to me, I still don't understand, like when you invest your money, is it in stocks? Is it in gold? Is it in a savings account? Is it like, what does that mean?
Lots of people invest in lots of different asset classes. So an asset class is just a different type of investment. Gold is quite a conservative investment, but the price does fluctuate. So during, you know, recessions, it can decrease in exactly the same way shares do. Shares are a little bit more volatile because they are, you know, businesses and they function and they have profit and they have loss and all of this other stuff. But essentially, having a share means you have a very tiny part, a very tiny ownership in a company. So when you give them your $10, you go, hey, I've got $10, you know, let's actually be reasonable here. I've got $70, I want a bank share. And they'll say, no problem, here's your one share. That means you are then a shareholder in that company, and it means you part own that tiny, tiny, tiny amount. But it also means that you are entitled to the profit of that business because you're now a business owner, right?
Yeah.
So every time that they announce their profit, it gets divided by the shareholders that they have, and that's where your profit in shares comes from. So for me, stuff like gold is quite conservative. I've got clients with that in their portfolio. It all depends. Like property is another asset that people buy. You've got things like bonds, government-issued bonds. You've got, you know, you've got lots of different types of assets that people do invest in, but it's all up to you as to what makes sense to you. And it doesn't have to be complex. It's just more about doing a little bit of research and saying, all right, well, like, why does my friend earn, like, own gold? Maybe her parents owned gold. It's exactly the same kind of mentality when your parents are like, why haven't you bought a property yet? It's like, well, you know, maybe
every day.
Exactly. But maybe that is something that, you know, worked for her parents that now she's adopted as well. And I think that that's probably a really important point, to do your own research, because not every strategy that worked historically is going to work moving into the future. Like we know share prices have we know property prices have increased ridiculously over the last 35 years, but it's really, it's not going to happen into the future because it's completely unsustainable. So we know that maybe property isn't the way that this generation is going to create wealth, even though the previous generations have created wealth with property. And you mentioned something before about, like, you know, our super went up and down. You only ever, quote, lose money if you sell your asset while it is valued at less. So if you have a share portfolio or you have your super fund, that super fund would have exactly the same amount of shares in it as it did a year ago, because that's how much was just in your super. If they are valued at less, and say one day your super is worth $10,000 and then, you know, we went through COVID and it's worth $7,000, that doesn't mean you have less shares. It just means if you were to cash out your shares, they would pay you $7,000 for them. And the important thing is to not cash out while your asset is valued at less. It's important to just wait for it to increase again to cash it out. So you've never, quote, you've never actually lost money. You only lose money if you sell, which is why I'm so passionate about saying, you know, try not to take money out of super right now, because if you're taking money out of super, you're taking it out while it's valued at less, and it might feel like $10,000, but it's actually a fair bit more than $10,000. And then, as I said before about the investment thing, like if you take $10,000 today in 10 years, that $10,000 would have been worth $20,000. And because money doubles every 10 years, 10 years after that, it would have been worth $40,000. So what are you stopping future you from having access to? Does that make sense?
It makes so much sense, finally. And I'm so glad that you taught me that because, again, I was still tempted, not just for the Cartier bracelet, but maybe for like a house deposit or something to take that money out of super. But when I checked my account and it was my super account and it was so low, I was like, surely I can't have worked for 12 years to have this little super in my account. But that makes complete sense now.
Yeah, I'm because very glad that it will fluctuate. And at the end of the day, that means that your shares are valued at less. So say you purchased your share, like let's just strip it back to one share. Say you went and purchased one share 6 months ago for $1, but now that share is worth 50 cents. Well, actually, if you purchased another share, aren't you getting that share at a discount now that you purchase it again? So if you then bought another share for 50 cents, your average price that you've paid across your portfolio is 75 cents. So by purchasing at different time points, if you purchase at a high amount and then you purchase at a low, it actually creates this average so that you never actually pay the top of the market. You're always paying the average of the market if you divide it by it all, which is why we do a thing called, and this is probably getting too complex, but I think it's important and you guys can like just say that you've like totally done a, you can say that you've done some kind of investment masterclass, but that is called dollar cost averaging, where we invest consistently over the long term. So sometimes we might be just getting one share. Sometimes we might be getting two shares because they're discounted to 50 cents. So it's more about making use of the fluctuations because we don't actually have the power to predict the market. Like if you take time back to January, February, and you said to me, Victoria, we're going to be on the verge of a recession. We are going to be, you know, all working from home. Like we're going to be wearing masks in public everywhere and you're only going to be allowed out of your house for 1 hour each day. I would have been like, ha, yeah, that's really funny, as if that's going to happen.
I mean,
there are a couple of people who predicted it and we really should have listened to them, but not many people.
The doomsday preppers.
Yeah, let's be honest. They're like jumping up and down and saying, oh my gosh, I told you so.
I told you so.
But not many people predicted this, especially people that were prominent enough to warn us. And, you know, we can't time the market. So the next best thing to timing the market is to always be in the market.
Yeah. Wow. I honestly, and I'm not just saying this because you're here, but I cannot wait to go through my budget and do another budget again.
I'm here for it. I will do it for you.
I feel like I've just cut myself off. I haven't done a budget in, I would say, probably like about 4 years. And I just feel like there is so much more I could be saving to put towards A, my Cartier bangle, B, maybe a property, C, maybe investments.
I will do your budget for you. And then I want to hear from you later how well it went. Honestly, let's do it.
Oh my gosh. A budget glow up. Amazing.
Yes, so like a glow
the
up.
The way I finish all of. Yes. I love that. You're like my financial fairy godmother. So
can
the way I finish
stick?
All like, of my
can
episodes.
Can that become a thing?
Yeah.
I want to be a financial 100%. Fairy godmother. Thank you.
Please. It's your new name.
All right. How do you finish all your
so
episodes?
I always finish.
As if I don't
sorry,
know.
I've said it like five times.
I was going to say, as if I'm not aware.
What is the one piece of financial advice you would give to every millennial 20-something?
Wow, that was delayed. I would say budget. So obviously investing is really important. Start thinking about that. But the one thing that is going to provide you with a lot of empowerment, a lot of motivation is really understanding your budget. And if you write it out on the back of an envelope, that's awesome. But I want you to be aware of what money comes into your account and what money goes out and what you allocate to different things. Like don't judge yourself on what you are spending, but just be honest with yourself so that you understand what your power is. Because so many people put their heads in the sand about budgeting and finance and it's all too hard. I promise you it's not. And if you start now, you're creating incredible habits for the rest of your life and you'll be able to actually save. And what we can do actually, Phoebe, is I'll give you a budget template that you can like Dropbox link in your notes so that people can just fill it in the way that I do. And it'll make a lot of sense. But I think it's really important to be on top of these things because if you understand what's coming in and going out now, when your financial life gets more confusing and, you know, maybe someone else comes into it and maybe you have children, you'll be in a better position to actually take hold of that. You're less likely to be in debt. You're less likely to, you know, essentially bury your head in the sand because you feel empowered to go, okay, well, this isn't so hard. I'm just going to look at what I've got to play with.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I love that. And I hate that I do this, but I relate everything back to food and nutrition because I feel like that is what a lot of
those
my
are
listeners
your values.
Resonate with as well. Yes, and no, but to put it in the same kind of terms, I guess if you're cheating yourself about your budget, it's kind of the same as to cheating yourself about a diet. And if you are on, for say, example, a challenge and you input all of your food into MyFitnessPal correctly, you will be on track to hit your fitness goal. But if you're lying about, you know, omitting that you had a Magnum, for example, and you're not putting it in there, then you can't, and you're mad
you're
at yourself.
Cheating yourself.
Wondering why you didn't lose that weight. You're cheating.
You're absolutely cheating yourself.
And
something I say all the time is if you live fake rich now, you'll be real poor later. And I think that that comes down to just like if you're pretending or you are, you know, living beyond your means right now, like it will catch up with you. You're going to end up in a situation where you're either in debt or you're not able to afford your lifestyle or things will have to dramatically change. But if you put your finances in line with your actual life now, you're not going to end up in trouble down the track. You're going to be just able to coast along and make sure that things are all okay. Whereas too many people just go, all right, well, I'll just keep up with the Joneses and I'll buy the Gucci belt. It doesn't matter. They end up in debt that way because they just live fake rich. And I think that if you can choose not to do that, then you're in a really lucky position.
That's it. I'm deleting Instagram. I'm canceling my account. I'm done.
You don't need to be that dramatic, but I think we do need to be honest with ourselves and remember that Instagram is a highlights reel. Like people aren't going to post their budgets on there. I mean, they post it on my pages, but they aren't going to post it on the regular Instagram. They're not going to say, oh my gosh, this was gifted. And too often do we see Instagrammers who are, you know, gifted all of this stuff and you go, oh, well, I must have to buy that. You just inherently feel that way and it shouldn't be the case.
No, never. Oh, thank you so much. That was the best.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Like, who would have thought that talking about finance can be slightly enjoyable?
I literally never thought it would be, but I can honestly
say. But you were like,
right,
oh,
when
I'll give her a
get
crack. I'll just
things,
pull her on the podcast. Like, it's not going to be good, but like.
No, it's such an important lesson to learn. Such an important lesson to learn. Don't you second guess me,
no. Confessions of a train wreck. If you haven't subscribed yet, hello, do it now. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, rate me and write a review. See you again next week for Trainwreck Tuesday.